Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What up, Beck?
And welcome to another edition of the Hoops Adjacent edition, I should say, of the Athletic NBA Show. I'm David Aldridge. Was on vacation this week.
God damn!
Well earned. And some housekeeping. No show next week.
Oh my God!
Because I will be in no mood mentally and in no condition emotionally to do a show on election day. So just get that out of your minds. We'll be back in 2 weeks after this one. So enjoy yourselves. Hopefully it turns out the way we all want it to turn out. So wanted to reach out to one of my good friends in the business and one of the great writers of this age, who's covered so many winning teams and covered the league so well for any number of publications, most recently Bleacher Report, my buddy Howard Beck. And I have to say it this way because you need to get this trademarked. What up, Beck?
What up, DA? Thank you for that very kind intro. And I believe every time somebody introduces me with what up, Beck, they owe Zach Lowe a nickel. And by the time our careers are all over, Zach is going to have a lot of nickels.
I hope you got it trademarked. Why is Lowe getting the money for your name?
I mean, in fairness, he started this because back when he was at Grantland and the first time I went on his podcast, he told this story involving Kobe Bryant, which is where the What Up Beck comes from. And ever since then, Zach has introduced me that way. So it really, like, Kobe created it, but Zach made it a thing, of course, in NBA niche podcasting, as he likes to call it.
See, I don't have anything like that in my career. I don't have anything like that. Like the great Phil Jasner had Ask Your Question, Philip, from Iverson.
Yes.
You know, I don't have anything like that. Shaq or Lacey Banks, the late Lacey Banks, had all the Shaq interactions with him over the years.
Didn't Lacey also get the "I like you, Lacey" from MJ?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. That's right. That's right. That's right. So, man, what a crazy season. What do you think of A, how they got through the bubble, and B, what's up with this starting up again in like 5 minutes? I thought we were going to get a little time off.
Man, I'm so dizzy about timing and dates and everything else. Like the fact that the finals just ended, but it's October and it's almost Halloween. And what, like, I can't keep my head straight anyway, where it regards the calendar and the NBA. So might as well just start right up again. Like,
yeah, right.
I'll tell you this, DA, it will feel more normal, even with the quick restart, it will feel more normal to see the NBA playing on December 22nd and certainly on Christmas than anything we've just experienced in the last few months. Like, it might feel rushed and it might feel weird to start up again so soon, but at least it will feel like the right thing at the right time of year with the right weather outside. And it lines up. I'll just say this will echo probably everything everyone has said to date since they concluded the bubble. I mean, impressive as hell that they pulled it off. I think we all had a healthy skepticism / concern somewhere in that range. Not necessarily skepticism, like I don't think they can do it, but just concern about whether this could be done safely. They obviously came through with flying colors when it came to the virus. They did an incredible job, obviously, in integrating social justice causes and making sure that those issues were not forgotten. They handled the Wildcat strike really well as a league and navigated that, I think, very constructively and beautifully. There's not like, and the quality of play was high. Like, it will never feel normal to have seen games with no fans and with weird virtual fans with varying head sizes. But the visuals of that notwithstanding, the game itself, the product itself was at the highest level. It still felt like NBA playoffs. It still felt like a real finals. And I, you know, years from now we will see highlights and it will always be jarring because the backdrop is and the sound is just different. But it was a legit season and a legit finals and a legit championship. And they did it brilliantly. But I have said all along, to segue to our next issue, I've said all along, as I don't mean to be dismissive or playing this down, but like, the bubble was the easy part.
Yeah. Like,
right. Because it was the safest thing you could do. Doing next season, figuring that out with probably no bubble was always going to be the harder thing as long as the virus was still raging, and it is.
Yeah, it is going to be, you know, I won't pretend like I didn't have my doubts, because I did, about the season getting done. Not so much that the league wouldn't take it seriously. I just frankly didn't know that the players could be as disciplined as they were. I mean, with very few exceptions, they stuck to the message and they stuck to taking it seriously and not doing the things I thought players would do to try to get around the rules. They stuck to the rules for the most part. They got it done, and full credit to them for doing that. And it's not that I am skeptical about starting so soon, because let's be honest, there's 8 teams that haven't played in 8 months. They'd like to start playing now if they could, right? So you can't ignore those 8 teams that weren't in the bubble. And then there were another, you know, 6 teams that weren't there very long, that could use some playing time again. But I do wonder if we're going to see LeBron opening day. I mean, this is a very quick turnaround. If you're going to start December 22nd, that means you're going to start camps December 1st, you know, and that's 5 weeks away, you know, like, and they just finished the finals. I mean, I'll be very surprised if you see full Lakers teams and full Miami teams and to a lesser degree, you know, full Boston teams and full Denver teams on opening night.
Yeah. So I was looking at this and there's a phenomenal website that I discovered years ago called Days Between Dates. Do you know this website?
Right. Oh, sure. Do it all the time. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's like journalist's greatest tool, because we can't count. I mean, that's way too much to ask. So I was playing around with Days Between Dates. Okay, so if you went from the end of the finals in 2019 on June 13th to opening night, that was 131 days, or 132 if you count October 22nd, the day that was actually opening night. So 131 days, roughly. Miami and LA will have gotten 72 days. So that is a steep, steep decline in off days. But Boston and Denver will have gotten 86 to 87 days.
Yeah.
Still far short of 131. But the teams in the round before that, Toronto, Milwaukee, the Clippers, the Rockets, they'll get between 98 and 105 days. The teams that were out in the first round will have gotten between 111 to 121 days. And the teams that went to the bubble but didn't make the playoffs, 129 days, which is nearly the full offseason from finals to restart or to opening night, which, by the way, is not even the measure for all teams, because most teams are not in the finals even in a normal year, right? So it's what I'm saying is that 129 days for the teams that were in the bubble but not in the playoffs is the equivalent of going to the finals and having that kind of offseason. And then we had the teams that didn't go at all, the Delete Eight. So that's 14 teams that had about the right amount of offseason at minimum. So it's really a handful, and it's not to dismiss their concerns, but if the union and the players are going to decide this based on the greater good, not just the health of the league and getting back on schedule so that you can start at a normal time next year, man, but also what benefits the most players, it's pretty much like 20 plus 25 teams that can say, yeah, we're okay. And that's rough for the two teams that made the finals, I understand. But for most of the league, they had a sufficient offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. But you know, the team that did win it, they're a pretty big team, pretty important team in the league.
Fair.
And if you start opening night with, say, you know, a Kyle Kuzma, you know, Dwight Howard, KCP front court with no LeBron and no AD, who are not even in street clothes, they're not even in the arena, it's going to be an interesting sell.
Yeah. I will be curious to see. I will be curious to see how they handle it.
There's no earthly way of knowing
he's singing
which direction we are going. There's no knowing where we're rowing, or which way the river's flowing.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Who
Comma Is
Adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs. Like the bolts in his bracket,
I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
With David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing him. Yes.
And then he kept their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in
there. Rodney Lembre.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies that can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops and Jason.
Welcome to Hoops.
5, 4, we have ignition.
Howard, I want to ask you also before we bring in, we're going to bring in Alex Lazary in a few minutes, who's the VP of the Milwaukee Bucks. And certainly Milwaukee, for a lot of different reasons, was one of the marquee teams in the NBA this year. And Alex was a part of all of it on and off the court. But, man, you did the most amazing essays for NBA.com during the season when Kobe passed. You did a very, very moving essay about him. And then during the bubble time, you did this really, really touching and act of allyship essay. And you basically were like, I'm a white guy talking to white people about Black Lives Matter.
Have you been paying attention this postseason? I mean, really paying attention.
We've not seen this ever in the history of the NBA.
The sights, sounds.
My legacy is going to be based on how much I give back to my people.
We found something worth fighting for.
The strangeness.
Our focus today cannot be on basketball.
And the slogans. Maybe you stopped reading them. Take another look.
And that's not Most something that you see normally. And others, I just wonder how that came about.
Listen to us.
And, you know, why you felt you wanted to do that.
Yeah, no, thanks, DA. So our friends at Turner had reached out earlier in the summer when they launched that new show, The Arena, which was a show designed to be the show of the restart, right? Like we have Inside the NBA, and what they wanted to do was have a show that was another studio show that was different, that was going to focus on not just the basketball part of the restart, but the social justice issues, COVID, everything. It was a broader, different kind of tone for a show. So in doing that, they reached out to Bleacher Report at that time and said, look, does anybody from BR Mag want to participate in this? It's an open invitation. We're doing these video essays, 2 to 3 minutes. We're going to have some outside people. Jemele Hill did one. We'll have, you know, obviously some Turner voices, but there was an invitation to BR Mag to the writers. And so I thought about it. And the first thing that hit me, DA, was what I said in the essay, which was I keyed in on the jersey messages that said,
listen, hear, respect. It's not just about
those
George
were different.
Floyd,
that wasn't just saying Black
Taylor,
Lives Matter or you know, vote or, you know, it's the various other messages were much more kind of specific to certain kinds of issues. Right.
Yeah.
But the ones that said, listen to us, who are you asking to listen? Well, it's not other black people. but black players are not asking other members of the black community to listen to what they're saying about these concerns about police brutality and everything related to it. That's directed at me. That's directed at the rest of America, at primarily white people. And so I kept thinking, like, if there's an opportunity to do something thoughtful here, they threw it wide open. But I just thought there was something interesting to think about there. And, you know, you and I know each other well, and we've had these conversations. You know how I feel about these issues. But I thought this is an opportunity to follow in the footsteps of, frankly, some people who really, I think, pointed the direction for me on this or were a guidepost, which is Kyle Korver, the things he has said, the things he has written in the Players Tribune, speaking up specifically as a white person playing in a primarily black league and what that means for how he understands these issues, what Pop has done, what Steve Kerr has done. And I just felt like those guys showed the way. This is how we who work in and around this league, I mean, forget just the NBA, like just who are citizens of this country and who need to care about our fellow citizens, period. Like I took a lot from what those guys said and did. And I thought that's the right way. That's the way to do this. If I have an opportunity to do as they did, to speak as they have spoken and to try to amplify these causes, because maybe white people who are tuned out will listen more to it coming from another white person. I don't know. I don't think that should be the case, but I do think, as I said in the essay, it is our moral obligation to listen, to speak up, and to the extent that we can bring others into the cause, or to at least listen to what's going on and be more aware, more engaged. I felt like that was a great opportunity for me to do so.
Well, man, I appreciate you, using the platform, because, those are conversations. You're exactly right. I mean, change will come when white people talk to other white people. I've said that on this show numerous times. There's nothing that I can say that anybody else can say in the black community that's going to change white people's minds, but until white people talk to other white people and have those hard conversations.
It's not just about George Floyd or Breonna Taylor or Jacob Blake. It's not just about police brutality. It's about the systemic racism that permeates our society, the insidious ways it manifests in everyday life. But we don't see it, you and I. It doesn't directly impact us. We've been willfully blind.
Let's bring in our guest for this week. I'm happy to bring him in because I think he is really part of this bigger discussion that we like to have here on the Athletic NBA show and on Hoops Adjacent about not just the game, which we all love, but the issues that the game creates and that we must respond to. So I want to bring in, now somebody asked me to ask him if he's going to run for senator. I'm not going to ask him that first, but we'll see. Alex Lazary, the vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks. Alex, thank you for joining me and joining Howard today, man.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Of course, man. And Beck, just jump in anytime, man. As you know, Beck hosted the full 48 as one of the great podcasts about hoops in recent years. So he's very, very skilled at this. So jump in anytime with questions.
I will, but it is your pod, so I'm gonna let you take the lead here, D. I don't want to step on your toes, man.
There's something I've always wanted to say on a podcast, if I may.
Go ahead.
What up, Beck?
There you go. Universal.
What up, Alex? There it is. Another nickel for Zach Lowe.
Man, you've got to get that trademark, man. This is really annoying me that you're not getting paid for this. This is your name. It's your labor.
Zach and I will work out the legal details of this at some point.
Please give us an update whenever you can. Alex, man, thank you for joining us. And I really wanted to have you on because as everybody in the United States certainly knows by now, Wisconsin just happens to be a really important state in the presidential election next week. And I wanted to talk to you about the Bucks' continuing role well before this summer, before everything that happened, unfortunately, with Jacob Blake and Kenosha, before the death of George Floyd. The Bucks have been front and center in these discussions, these social justice discussions. And obviously, I think most people who listen to this show know that what happened with Sterling Brown last year with the police department there, there's still legal proceedings going on between him and the city of Milwaukee. But I wanted to ask you what it feels like on the ground right now, 1 week out from the election.
It's intense, and not just because there's election going on, but also because, just today we announced another 5,000 cases of coronavirus and, right, over right. 50 deaths, shattering records that we had before. And so, I think, with all that's happened, especially in Wisconsin, there's a lot of angst. And I think also, though, a lot of enthusiasm for, and intensity to get out and vote and make your voice heard, because I think there are a lot of people who are feeling like their voices aren't being heard. And there are a lot of people, I think, especially in Wisconsin, who are feeling like, when are we going to be able to catch a break? We're having, all of the, we have the Jacob Blake shooting, and now we have coronavirus, which, enough people in the state are not taking seriously enough. And it's having devastating impact. And so, I think what you're seeing is, people and from what I'm seeing, this was the first time that I, waited online to vote early in a Wisconsin election.
Right.
And I think that just shows, the intensity and the enthusiasm that people are having to get out to vote. And, hopefully, the message that that we're putting out to, to help people, know where to go to vote, to push people to get out to vote, is having an effect.
Alex, what is the best role, or how do you see the role of the Bucks at a time like this, and how does it maybe differ from prior elections? Because I know you guys are a politically minded group, at least part of team ownership, maybe all of it. But this election is, of course, like none that any of us in our lifetimes have seen either. So is it different this time in the way you see kind of your civic duties as a franchise than maybe in the past?
You know, I think for the Bucks, we've always been very civic minded, you know, and if you look at the history of Bucks ownership, you know, we were, you know, before my dad and Wes and Jamie bought the team was owned by a United States Senator Herb Cole, who was one of the great philanthropists in Wisconsin and a progressive champion in the Senate. And so I think what we try to do is, you know, follow in that legacy of Senator Cole. And that's not about, you know, partisan politics so much as it's making sure that, that we're a good corporate citizen and that we're doing our part to make sure that it's setting an example for Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And I think using our platform for good. And, you know, if that means, using our platform for racial and social justice, if that means using our platform to increase voter turnout. And again, it's not for, you know, the Bucks itself is a nonpartisan team and a nonpartisan organization. And so when we want to get people out to vote, the Bucks vote that, you know, we put together is not just about Milwaukee. It's about the entire state.
Right.
And we want everyone to make sure and that they know, like, get out, have your voice be heard. I think that's the message, you know, when George and I canvassed over the weekend, George and I never once asked someone, who are you voting for, or get out for this candidate or anything like that. What we just said to people was, hey, did you go vote? If not, here is how you go vote. Make sure you're registered. Because, you know, again, I think the most important thing you can do and the best way to participate in society and our democracy is to vote and make sure that your voice is heard and that the candidates that you're voting for believe in what you believe.
Alex, you mentioned you went out with George Hill over the weekend to canvass. And George was at the center of a lot of things that went on in the bubble. Obviously, the decision that the team made not to play in the wake of the Jacob Blake shooting really was a catalyst for an entire industry shutting down.
We have major breaking news in the NBA where the Milwaukee Bucks have reportedly decided to boycott Game 5 against the Orlando Magic in protest of the police shooting of Jacob Blake.
You guys shut an entire industry down. The whole sports industry stopped for 48 hours because of the decisions you guys made. And I just wonder if you've ever had a chance to kind of reflect on the incredible power that showed in terms of what players and teams in it working in unison and in concert with one another can really have on bringing attention to issues outside of sports and outside of basketball in particular.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when we think about, you know, what happened in the bubble and what we were able to accomplish, you know, obviously the season on the court didn't end the way that we wanted it to, but I've never been more proud of a team and what they were able to accomplish in kind of pushing society forward. And I think, you know, quite honestly, when people remember the 2020 bubble in the season, you will be hard pressed to, you know, remember it. You know, the first thing that you might think of is the fact that the Bucks stood up for racial justice and as you said, shut an industry down for 48 hours. And that's incredibly powerful. And I think what I was so proud of for what they did was they didn't just say, hey, we're not going to play and go back and, you know, back to their hotel room, you know, and play cards or whatever. What they did was they stayed in the locker room. They, you know, they called state leaders. They called other people and said, you know, what is going on here? Why, you know, there have been protests in the streets. There have been marches. You know, why is this keep happening? Why isn't there any change? And then they came out and actually put out a statement that said, you know, hey, the Republican legislature in Wisconsin hasn't met, you know, in at the time it had been 4 months and now it's been over 6 months. You know, like, we're calling on them to at least go back to work. and shined a light, I think, on what's going on in the state, and I think what's going on around the country. And, you know, to me, that was, you know, obviously, like, I want nothing more than to win a championship. But to me, what they did will reverberate, I think, throughout the country for, you know, for years and decades, and hopefully will be kind of like a starting point for, you know, when we kind of saw a turn in change being able to happen.
Alex, I think we'd probably all agree on everything you just said in terms of the impact, the significance, how meaningful that moment was. And I agree, we're going to remember that for a long time. And I truly hope, I think, as we all do, that it is the start of something, and that none of us lose sight of this, and that players will carry forth that same energy into future seasons. I don't think this is a one time thing. Like, I think this is the new reality for the NBA and for athletes in general. But all that said, at the moment that it happened, it was kind of jarring, because we didn't really see this coming. It's not like there was they weren't holding meetings and there weren't leaks about the play. Like, I mean, there was some murmurings, but when it happened, it was very sudden, and like they didn't even share it with the Magic that night. Like, it just spread throughout the rest of the bubble, and all the teams hopped on board. But your team is the one that really got it started. In its own locker room, literally with minutes to go. What can you recall about, or take us through from your perspective, how it unfolded that night? What your initial reaction was, and what, you know, what role, if any, you and your father and ownership played in kind of navigating just the events of the night?
Yeah, I mean, I remember and the reason nothing had leaked is because it was spontaneous. And if you haven't listened to, you know, Kyle Korver speak on this, he just did a talk at Creighton.
Yeah,
I would highly recommend everyone listen to, you know, at least that clip.
And I'm trying to understand Black Lives Matter for the first time. And I've got a lot of white friends who are like, all lives matter and blue lives matter. And this isn't right. This isn't helping. And I'm like, yeah, I don't understand it either. But then I'm also in relationship with a lot of black friends and teammates who see this completely differently, right? And it was in that moment where I'm like, I don't get it.
You know, I think Korver explained it best. Like, it, you know, they were all in the locker room, and Darvin came in, and Darvin's got, two young kids who are living in Milwaukee. You know, I think they're, you know, in their teens, and I think one's, you know, in college. And just the raw emotion of, you know, not being able to be there and being scared of, you know, what happens if your kid walks down the street and runs into the wrong person and there's nothing you can do. And I think the raw emotion that everyone on the team felt and the fear because of it, you know, especially it happening in our backyard. And George, I think, kind of was just like, look, like I can't do it. And then, you know, Sterling being like, yep, me neither. And then kind of the whole team. And that just shows how close I think our team is, where everyone said, you know what, we're going to stand together and be together on this. And we're going to use this as a moment to actually, try to do something good and not just, you know, say like, hey, we're not playing and leave, but we're going to stay in here and make a point and try to have some real impact. Right before it, you know, I was I actually was talking with John Horst probably 20 minutes before the game. Then I turned the TV on, and I think right as I turned the TV on, I got a text from, it was probably Woj or someone who was like, hey, or maybe it was Bontemps who was like, hey, are you guys coming on the court?
It was me.
It was you?
All right. Of course it was me.
I got probably like 10 people. I think I had 10 people literally who texted me like, hey, are you guys coming on the court? And I was like, what are you talking about? So I literally had just hung up with like John like 10 minutes before, and I didn't have the game on yet. So I turned the game on, and I was like, I wonder what's going on. Like, if John had known about this, he would have told me. And I think literally right when I hung up with John, he was arriving at the court and then kind of saw, like, realized everything that was going on. And for us, you know, we've always, you know, as an ownership, you know, between me and my dad, we've always, and Wes and Jamie, have always just been, you know, a firm believer in like, hey, we back our guys. And, you know, especially in a moment like this, with what they were calling for, and I think all of us just feeling kind of hopeless and helpless.
You know, Alex, you've made it quite clear that the team is not, you know, partisan in the sense that it doesn't advocate for one party or another, or one person or another to win an election. But you live in a very partisan state. I think it's fair to say, right? I mean, and I wonder how you navigate that space, because, you know, I remember when you all were trying to get Fiserv Forum built, and, you know, the point you were making was this arena is going to be for everybody in the state of Milwaukee. It's not going to just be for Democrats or Republicans. It's going to be for everybody, right? So, and that was part of the, I think, of what got everybody, you know, kind of bipartisan support for it, was that everybody understood it was good for the state of Milwaukee. It was good for the city. It was obviously good for your franchise, for your team. But what is it like? And you know, Wisconsin is hyper partisan. It's not like, mm-hmm. you know, Delaware, which, you know what I mean? Like, you know, or Montana, where, you know, everybody kind of feels the same way in the state, right? There's not much opposition. Yeah. You've got hyper partisan divide in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, it's a 51-49 state pretty much. So how do you navigate there?
Well, look, you know, I think sports, and Beck, I think you said, like, you know, maybe this is a new normal for sports, but sports has always been used as either a way to unite, but also to move society forward. Yeah. If you look at a lot of the great, you know, civil rights activists and icons, you know, Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jackie Robinson, et cetera, they're all athletes. And, you know, when you know, the Olympics is, you know, as much as it is to be used as a, you know, as a great time for all countries to come together, it's also had a history of, you know, being used as a political tool, right. to, you know, whether it's boycotts or you name it. So I think sports has always played that dual role. I think what we try to do with the Bucks is, you know, we're not advocating for parties. We sometimes might just advocate for issues. And, you know, like for us, we don't look at voting or racial justice as Democrat or Republican from the Bucks point of view. What we do is what we want to say is like, hey, look, we're fighting for racial justice.
Yeah.
We want to work with organizations and advocate for, you know, for policies that is going to fulfill that goal. We want to, you know, work with organizations and groups and advocate for policies that is going to make it easier and more accessible for people to vote. Because that is something that, you know, that we believe in. We want to work with organizations that also make it easier and more accessible for people to vote, not just for presidential elections, but we want to educate people on down ballot races as well.
Right.
And talk about how important sheriff's races, county executive races, mayor's races, et cetera, are. So I think for us, you know, it's trying not to be, you know, hey, pro-Democrat, pro-Republican. It's trying to be, you know, hey, how can we push these issues forward? You know, I mean, you know, like, I think everyone knows my politics. I'm sure everyone knows my dad's politics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do that kind of on our own time, which a ton of business leaders, do. I mean, if you look around the NBA, there's no shortage of people who are, you know, who on their own time support, you know, Republicans or Democrats. But the Bucks as an organization is trying to move those issues forward. And if there are Republicans who want to work with us on that and Democrats who want to work with us on that, great. We're here to work with you. But, you know, racial justice and voting rights and voting access to us are, you know, should be nonpartisan. I don't know if it's always been, it doesn't always seem like it is that way, but,
right.
You know, those are the issues that we're trying to promote as an organization.
I'm glad you ended on that note, Alex, because, my first thought was, well, yeah, voting rights and racial justice shouldn't be partisan.
It should be.
But
I would say it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be partisan.
And right. yet, for mm-hmm. some reason, mm-hmm. they seem to be. So let's move over there for a second. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be, but they are. And we know which party is in favor of and seemingly pushing against some of these issues that we on this podcast are all, we all agree on what the priority should be. It is not universally agreed to. The NBA as a league, as a business, as an institution, embraced Black Lives Matter, put those words on the court in the bubble, supported the players in every which way as they looked to amplify these issues during the restart. As with everything, it became, and I hate to bring in a mixed sport metaphors, but it became a political football. I don't know if there is there any such thing as a political basketball. Can we?
No.
Political puck.
Political puck. political puck would be good because, like, yes, you could really smack around a puck, exactly, and it's dangerous when, exactly, it's flying, right? So, like, yes, that's actually better than a political football. But it became this. You know, it was exploited for various reasons, especially with regard to the ratings. I don't buy any of that. But what I am curious about is, to the extent that you knew as a league, as a franchise, you know, and as the NBA, you knew that there would be some people who might be put off by those efforts and those messages. There is some risk in that. How did you guys view that? And on the subject of the ratings, does the NBA have data to show anything? Because when I always look at these issues and I say, listen, we can all speculate on why ratings are down and people can ascribe all the things that they want to ascribe it to, but none of us have the data to back that up. There's no poll, there's no Gallup poll, there's no any, like, we don't know. We're just guessing. Do you guys have a better sense of it, and especially a data-driven sense of it, of how those efforts by the league on the issues of racial justice and social justice may or may not have impacted the popularity of the league?
Look, there are people who just want to turn on a basketball game and watch basketball. Yeah. And there is nothing wrong with that sentiment or that thought. And I think generally, like, you know, that's kind of the way sports has tried to be, at least once the game has started, and tried to, you know, like, there are exceptions always. And I think Adam and the Players Association have done a great job at navigating those exceptions. And I think where we were at this time and in this moment, it was too important of an opportunity to miss, I think, in the bubble, to be able to put, you know, Black Lives Matter on the court. And when you think about what that actually did, and when you think about how powerful that was, you know, that might not be something that we realize how powerful it was until, you know, for, you know, maybe 10 years, mm-hmm, because you're going to have younger people, who are just seeing that on the court, on a basketball court. With, you know, players and coaches, and, you know, you're just kind of watching it, and then that becomes more normalized. And, you know, it feels crazy to say that Black Lives Matter needs to be normalized, but, you know, 2-3 years ago, probably even 8-9 months ago, it was a really controversial statement, right, to right, say that. And now it's, you know, kind of just part of the lexicon. And, you know, no, you don't hear politicians scared to say it. Like, it's just something that's said, and not to say that, you know, the NBA is the reason for that. But I do think putting that on the court, putting it on the warmups has a profound effect on how people view, you know, the term Black Lives Matter. And again, the NBA reaches a much different, you know, kind of group of people than, you know, people who are constantly watching CNN and MSNBC and Fox News all the time. You know, these are, you know, people who are probably watching, the vast majority of people watching the NBA are probably not, you know, the most active political, you know, voters who are always tuned in to everything that's going on. And I think that has a big effect, in just kind of being able to say, like, yes, we endorse Black Lives Matter. And I think that allows then a lot of, you know, it for young people, especially who, you know, maybe, you know, either growing up in a town or an area where maybe that's not said as much, or, you know, or what have you. And, you know, I think that has a big effect, and I think will down the road. And that doesn't take away, I think, from the fact that, look, most people, when they probably turn on sports, are, you know, kind of just looking to watch sports. Yeah. And, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, you can put Black Lives Matter on the court, and, like, you know, I can still watch basketball
exactly.
And enjoy the game.
Nothing's stopping you from watching the game. You still can watch the game with Black Lives Matter on the court.
You can still love the game, and you can just still watch it. The game of basketball didn't change. I can watch a movie with, you know, maybe someone whose political views I disagree with and separate that. And so, I think sometimes like people go a little bit overboard and like, oh, if you're putting that on the court, I can't watch basketball. It's like, no, you still can.
Yeah.
Like basketball's still going on. Like I can, you know, I can easily watch a movie or listen to music, you know, if the art is good.
Yeah.
Of maybe someone I, you know, might disagree with.
Yeah, you know, the people that say, the people that go on Twitter and say, I'll never watch the NBA again. Eh, you weren't watching the NBA all that much to begin with anyway. Let's be honest.
I also think we sometimes let the Twitter ecosystem kind of speak for the majority of people when it's not really speaking for the majority
of
people.
That's right.
I think a vast majority of people, who watch the NBA and who love the NBA, watch and love the NBA.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who watched it appreciated the stance that was taken and understood kind of the significance and the moment that we were in. The ratings and everything, like say what you want, but like, I don't think the NBA has ever been more popular.
Yeah.
And I don't think basketball has ever been more popular. And it's not like the NFL isn't following in the NBA's footsteps right now. It's not, you know, the NFL apologized for how they,
right.
how they acted over the last few years. So like, it's not just the NBA. And I think, you know, we need to maybe take stock into, you know, why are people saying, you know, just blame, you know, just talking about the NBA, and maybe not, you know, MLB and NFL in the same way.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Well, I wrote this last a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know, then you will have to explain to me how the horses are all a bunch of woke liberals, because the ratings for the Triple Crown are through the floor, just like every other sport. So there's a million reasons why. I don't know what order they go in. That's all I've said to people. You may be right. I just don't know what order the reasons are. That may be reason one. It may be reason 25. You know, you've got to give me. You got to put them in some kind of order for me to be able to correctly assess the impact of them. You know what I mean? So let me get you out on this, Alex, because I don't want to keep you all afternoon. You've got stuff to do. It's 1 week to go to the election. I'm sure you've got other things going on in your life right now. And I promised Alex I would not have him or ask him anything that would get him fined. So. So I don't think this will get you fined, but let me just ask you this. I mean, as you guys, I'm sure, have done a fairly exhaustive deep dive and self-reflection forensic look at exactly what the hell happened with your basketball team down in Orlando. Give me the bullet points. Give me the elevator pitch for, okay, here's why this didn't turn out the way we thought. And this is generally what we think we can do to fix it.
Yeah, I mean – It's tough because like you don't want to make excuses for what happened, right? Like we lost, and I thought we, you know, there were that, you know, the series against the Heat very easily could have been, you know, we could have been up 3-1. Mm-hmm. You know, we just didn't execute in the way that we normally do, and had, I think, all season. And you got to give a lot of credit to the Heat. You know, they made every team, I think, uncomfortable, and their ability to execute was really impressive.
Yes.
You know, look, I don't think you can, you know, we all say like this was an unprecedented situation. And yes, while everyone faced the same problems, other teams, I think, you know, some teams dealt with it in different ways. And I think, you know, when you look at, you know, kind of us getting down there and then in the middle of the playoffs, you know, you've got, you know, kind of like Wisconsin being, you know, rattled by, you know, a shooting in its backyard, and the emotional toll I think that took. And I think it was just, it was hard for us to, I think, get that chemistry and that rhythm that we're so used to. And that was something that I think we had all season. And, you know, being off for 4 months and then, you know, coming back, it was tough. You know, with that being said, there were, I think, a lot of things that, you know, the coaches and players probably would have, you know, done differently. And I think what, you know, what we've been doing this offseason is trying to figure out, okay, how can we, you know, we still, you know, we have the number one team for a reason, though.
Yeah.
And so what you don't want to do is overreact too much to an unprecedented situation.
Right.
But I think what we are looking at is, okay, how can we still make this team better? And how can we add pieces that, you know, through the draft, free agency and trades that are going to, you know, add playmaking, I think increase shooting and toughness. You know, those are all probably, you know, a lot of very vague things that I'm saying, but
you can go as specific as you like, John.
You can tell us which stars you're going to trade
exactly.
for next week.
At the end of the day, you know, look, I think they're, you know, I think everyone, you know, everyone watched the games and everything. And,
yeah.
You know, there are, I think, you know, a lot of things that we need to, you know, there are things that we need to improve on and change. And, you know, but also can't, you know, look past the fact that, you know, Giannis got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, when you lose the two-time MVP and defensive player of the year, that's going to be a tough thing to come back from.
Yeah. Well, I've asked a bunch of people this. If you can take anything, can you extrapolate anything from Orlando, or was it just such a unique set of circumstances that it almost has to be viewed as a one-off?
No, I think you can definitely extrapolate things from it. But as I said, I don't think you can overreact.
Yeah.
You don't want to overreact to it. And I think, look, a lot of teams are going to have to, and this is going to be a problem for, I think, every team, right? Like, every team's going to have to, you know, make decisions and try to figure out, okay, what was it that, you know, what can we take away from the bubble that, you know, is something that when we get back to, you know, semi-normal basketball and then maybe even normal basketball, that is going to be the same. And, you know, what was just unique to the bubble? I think it'll be fascinating to watch over the next few years to see, you know, kind of what lessons different people take from what happened in the bubble. And like, look, this was an unprecedented situation. It was a wild experience. And, you know, credit to the guys for sacrificing all that they did.
Well, Alex, man, I genuinely appreciate the time. I know how precious time is in this last week before Election Day for all of us. And so I appreciate you spending time with us. And I hope everything turns out the way you want next week. I'll put it that way.
Thank you.
Yes.
If I could just say one thing to anyone who hasn't made a plan to vote yet or is thinking about making a plan to vote, just go to iwillvote.com, find your state. Make sure you're registered. Make sure you get out to vote. This is the most important election of our lifetime. So make sure you have your voice heard.
Absolutely. And if you, you know, as I always say, if you don't vote, then you have no say in what happens the next 4 years. You don't get to say anything because you had a chance to do something about it. And if you say, for whatever reason, I'm not voting, then shut up. You don't belong in the conversation. You don't have the right to speak in this conversation. and so that's why, you know, people died so that we could vote. All of us could vote. So you need to pay those people back by voting. Have a plan, have a backup plan, take a friend and find friends who aren't normal voters and ask them to vote. See if they'll go vote with you. I couldn't agree with you more, Alex. Thank you, man. Good luck going forward. And Beck, as always, my brother, I appreciate you, man. Godspeed to you and your family and continued success, whatever the next thing brings. And I'm sure it's going to be very exciting. I've read some of your tweets. We can't wait to see what comes up next, man.
I can't wait to see what it is either, frankly. So, but thank you for all the kind words, DA. Thank you for bringing me in and allowing me to co-host. This was fun. This was a blast. And Alex, thanks for spending the time with us. This was great.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, everybody. No show next week. Go vote. See you.
Go vote.
Welcome to Hoop.
The comma is
adjacent.
Beck, I didn't know if you had something you wanted to promo.
But no, the only thing I've been promoing, I guess I could have squeezed it in, was the howardbeck.com.
Welcome to Who
Comma is
Adjacent.
The howardbeck.com.
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 So The Athletic ran on the very survey we talked about. It included a quote from an agent who essentially
said the NBA was crazy for allowing the players to handle their, you know, Black Lives Matter movement and their protests and blame the tanking ratings on that.
This is a total 180 in terms of branding and the way the NBA has presented itself. And a lot of people are just disconcerted by it. We used an analogy today on OutKick.
The way proclamations work in this country, the minute you say them anywhere, you're going to use this as a headline. Cuban says this, this, and this.
What's wrong with that headline? Cuban condemns
ethnic. Man, I'm just very tired of it. It's getting to the point where I tend to let people have their opinions, Mo. Like, go ahead, fire it off. It's all good. It's all just opinions. But at some point, somebody's got to be held accountable. And this rehashed talking point that somehow the player's stance on race relations is a problem just needs to be addressed. You know, so you have an agent blaming the league for falling for it, like they were duped by some kind of stunt. And in the same breath saying the players aren't smart enough to even know what they're doing. So listen, the problem that I have is, look, let's assume that this argument is right. I don't believe it is. There are other studies that say it's not. But let's just give you that. Let's grant you that the protests and the conversation about race and how Black people are treated and the overt activism is a problem for the league because it rubs fans the wrong way. Let's grant that. My issue, right, is how come nobody who agrees with this point is even asking, why is this such a turnoff to fans? Is any of them going to ever have the courage to bring up what might be actually the root cause of the problem? Instead, they're saying, hey man, don't rub the fans the wrong way. How about ask the fans why they're being rubbed the wrong way? So look, since you ain't gonna say it, I will say it. If you are turned off because players care and are speaking out about race, you're the problem. If you can't compartmentalize the game and the noise surrounding it, you're the problem. If you're using sports as some kind of like total recall experience where the entire production has to be about you and cater to every sensibility of you, you're the problem. If you still can't differentiate between the concept of Black Lives Matter and the organization Black Lives Matter, you're the problem.
You're the problem.
If your response is to complain about people who are hurting, people who are feeling compelled to be a voice, people who actually back up their speeches with action and are doing things and have a history of doing so, you're the problem. And I'm not even saying this thing they do is perfect, right? I'm not even saying how they address it is the most ideal. Believe it or not, there are some Black people who think it's a bit over the top, a little bit corny sometimes, yes. But you know what we understand? That it's not out of thin air that they're bringing this up. It's not based on nothing. And the reason that they're doing this is far greater than the inconvenience it might cause. It is ridiculous to constantly pander to this possibly straw man audience that somehow can't tolerate anytime Black people have dialogue or issues to address. That anytime a Black athlete does anything besides play, somehow they're offended. I don't even know if this audience actually exists. I don't know, but I know
if you think this now, you have some forefathers you're connected with, right? Because the same audience was saying the league was too black in Bill Russell's day. The same audience was saying the league was too playground and flamboyant in Dr. J's day. The same audience was saying the league was full of too many druggies in Magic's day. The same audience was saying it was too much style over substance in Jordan's day. The same audience was saying it was too hip-hop in Iverson's day. And now in LeBron's day, it's too political. You are the problem. They literally airbrushed the tattoos off of Iverson because of this stuff. We still doing this? We're still doing this. We're still pandering to a crowd that literally has a problem with black athletes existing. Like, it's not like we haven't been through this before. Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, like, name them, Althea Gibson. And it's not even just black. Athletes across the globe use sports to champion movements. It's not a black American thing. This is an athlete thing. And all of a sudden, it's a problem again.
So the white people have been taking us for rides for the past 400 years in America.
Oh, they can take a ride, man. I've been the one that was taking me for a ride. Still taking my people for a ride. The white people.
Tell me, Jack, would you have been prepared to go into the army if it hadn't been there?
So whoever you are, agent, who ain't got the heart to put your name on it, you're the problem.
You're the problem. You're the problem.
You're the problem.